How many of you guys like practical jokes? Anybody? A couple of you guys? Alright, well, forewarning, and I should have said this probably several years ago, but I'm not a big practical joker. I do not particularly like practical jokes, and this is a warning for all of you guys as well, so, that do like them especially. No, I just think they're so awkward, and you get uncomfortable, and then something weird, someone does something weird to you, and it just, I don't know, I just don't like them, I guess, but I'm glad you guys that do like them, if you guys see each other who raise their hands, you guys get together, you guys do whatever you want to each other, and you guys have a good time. Leave me out of it. I'm good without it. But there's a story that I found this week that was talking about these American soldiers that were in Korea, and they had this houseboy. And these American soldiers would just play all these little practical jokes on this houseboy. Nothing mean or you know, evil or anything like that, but they tie his shoelaces together, and he'd trip and fall, and you know, they'd lock him out of the house, and you know, watch him struggle to try to get in somehow. And they did all these little things to him. Nothing big or anything mean like that. But they did all these things for quite a while, and then they realized that he wasn't laughing with them, right? And that's one thing, practical jokers, I'm going to say, sometimes the other person's not laughing, guys. Sometimes they're not laughing. Keep that in mind. And even if they are laughing like I do, it's a nervous laughter and uncomfortable laughter. Anyway, did I make myself, I think I made myself clear. So, All right. But, so they do all these things to him, and they realize that he didn't really like it very much. He wasn't laughing with them and wasn't enjoying it, so these American soldiers finally stopped, and they said, you know, we're sorry, we didn't realize that you didn't enjoy it very much, and so we're gonna stop doing it, and they apologized, and he said, oh, well, that's okay, I guess, now then I can stop spitting in your soup, too, then. Because that's what we do, right? We don't let things go, we don't just kind of go with it, we get even, I won't get even, right? If someone plays a practical joke on me, I may play back a little bit, well, I don't know, I won't get even for the most part, but that's usually what we do, we don't let things go. We tend to hold on, or we harbor, or we get revenge in some way or another. And that's kind of the nature of practical jokes. They kind of escalate, right? You have one thing small, and something little happens. Anyway, this has nothing to do with practical jokes, the rest of this. But that's what we're doing. We're talking about starting over. We've been talking about that the last several weeks. We're going to wrap it up. We're going to actually switch gears next week. We're only going to spend 2 weeks on money, which, you know, is kind of, I think I'm going to let you guys off the hook a little bit by only spending a couple weeks on money when Jesus and talk about it so much. But couple weeks on money and then moving on to something else as we get closer to Easter already, actually. But we're wrapping up this series called Starting Over. We're saying, how can we make sure next time is better than last time? How can next time be better than last time? And just as a review, I know a lot of you guys were here and have heard this a couple times, but first we talk about myths. We talked about the experience myth because the myth says experience makes me wise. Because I've experienced it, I'm going to be wiser for it. But we said, no, it's not just experience, it's the evaluated experience that really makes us wiser. The second myth was the knowledge myth. Because I know better, I'll do better. And I think we can all tell a story where we said, well, I knew better, but we didn't do better. And because we don't have the self-control, or we don't have the willpower to do better the next time. And the third myth was the time myth. Time is against me. We say, time is against me. But we all know that we've rushed into something, we tried to alleviate something emotionally, or financially, or relationally, and so we rushed into something. And so what we said is that time is actually our friend. Time is actually on our side. And so then we started talking about, and a couple weeks ago, is kind of three areas, three things that we can start to do differently or to consider differently to make next time better than last time. And the first, and they were own it, rethink it, and release it. Own it, rethink, and release it. A couple weeks ago, we talked about owning it. We had the pie chart, and I completely forgot I was going to have a big sheet. So you imagine up here next to me, because I'm going to motion to it all the time. So you got to imagine, otherwise I just look weird doing this the whole time. So there's this chart, and it's got a big circle, right? We said I call it the circle of blame. And you picked your section. You said, this is my part of the problem. I cut out this piece of the pie, and that was mine. The blame game, we fall into that oftentimes. When we don't own it, we pass the blame to those around us. And then last week, we talked about rethinking. Said we need to, there's assumptions we make, there's these things that we hold in our mind, these ways of thinking that we continue to fall into the same pattern over and over again. And so we need to change our thinking. We answered the question last week, the question of, what was I thinking? Right? Because we've all asked that, we just don't usually answer it. And so last week we also had, you know, no one seemed to care a whole lot about my transformer. I was really excited about my transformer. And no one, anyway, that's all right. I'll let it go. That's what we're talking about. So I'll work on that. So, you know, not to be a cookie cutter, not to be the little gingerbread man, but to be a transformer that, you know, takes 1,000 moves to put together now. When I was a kid, you took 2 turns and you got it put together anyway. So, transformers, not just conformers. And this week we're going to talk about release it. What does it mean to release it? But just as we look at our pie chart, again, your imagination's still working, right? Just as you look at this, what's that? Thank you. It's my best artwork ever, I think, probably. So just as we look at that circle and we say, this is my piece of the pie, we have to figure out what to do with the rest of it. And the thing is, and unlike a strawberry pie for me or maybe a cherry pie for you, we don't take the biggest section, obviously, often, right? We don't take the biggest pie, slice of the pie in our blame game. But whatever is ours, we need to own it. And then we need to make a decision then to what do we do with the rest of it? How do we handle the rest of that chart, of that pie, moving forward? So the question we're going to start with this morning is this. It's not a very nice question. I missed my PowerPoint because it's hard to ask this question without seeing it, I think. So you have to visualize the question because it's kind of long. But it's how far into the future do we intend to carry the angst, created in our past? So how far into our future do we intend to carry that angst, kind of this anger, but it's not really just anger, it's more than anger, but it's not just fear, but it's more than fear. So angst is maybe, I don't know if it's a good word or not, but it fits that category. But how far do we intend to carry that angst with us into the future? I think all of us would say, well, we don't intend to, right? I don't plan to carry this. I don't want to bring this into my future. But I think if we don't make a decision, if we don't do something, if we don't plan for not carrying this to the future, that's just what happens, right? It just naturally flows, and I'm going to bring this into the future. So it's not a fair question, probably, maybe, because none of us plan or intend to do it, but that is what tends to happen. And for me personally, I'm going to share a little bit more personally this morning. I hope that's okay with you. I don't know why I asked that, because I always know it's okay with you, because it's this way it is. I went through this a few years ago, and I just was at a point where I felt like that angst was kind of like carrying a backpack full of rocks. I don't know, is that kind of an image that makes sense to you guys, that you're carrying this backpack, and, you know, for a while maybe it's kind of empty, but then you allow other people, well, she said this, and he lied about this, and this whole group, they brought together, and they conspired, and they manipulated, and they did all these things, and all these rocks get piled into that backpack. And we carry it around, and I just got tired of carrying it around. I didn't want to carry that backpack full of rocks anymore. I didn't want to do that. And I don't know, maybe it's been a while since you guys have had a backpack on, but, you know, you put that backpack on, and if it's really heavy, it just weighs your shoulders, and it just starts to hurt your back. And sometimes you actually don't realize you're wearing so much weight until you take it off, and you feel so much better. And that's where I got it. I was like, I just need to get rid of it. I need to do something with all of this weight. And I said this first service too, and I think it's so true, is I think what I'm going to share this morning and some of the things I'm going to say, nothing's going to be really, you know, brand new revelation or, you know, lightning bolt hitting us or anything like that. But it's so true, and it's so important. And I also want to say that some of you guys have gone through so much more than I have. And so I feel I think some of you guys could come up and talk better about this, I guess, what I'm saying, because some of you guys have gone through so much stuff and dealt with so many things that this feels kind of trite in some ways. I think it's still helpful, so important too. But I want to caveat with that. I hope that makes sense. But I just feel like at my, you know, where I'm at in life, that I, you know, as much as I've dealt with, I feel like there's some people, like some of you guys have dealt with so much more. So I want to kind of leave that out there too as well. But I think it can apply to all of us. I think this stuff can work well for all of us. And so I want you to imagine, or think of someone in your life, or someone you know, or someone, you know, you kind of know or whatever, that you just, looks like they have everything together, right? They've got, you know, their family life situation settled, they got a home that, you know, their life at home looks good, their business, and whatever their job is looks good. I knew a guy back from where I grew up that just looks like he's just had everything together. Multi-millionaire, he's raised up several businesses, sold them for millions of dollars, multiple homes in different places in the state. You know, you get to be a friend with him, and you get to use some of their houses at times, so that's kind of nice. But, you know, just a wonderful guy. He started Christian nonprofits for like halfway houses and different things like that. Just beautiful wife, beautiful situation, you know, great kids, He just had a great life and everything just fell in place for him. But then he shared his testimony with me and with lots of other people, but you look at his life and the choices he made when he was in college, the drugs and the alcohol and the abuse of some of those things, the relationships he had. And then you look at, he's still a businessman, but he traveled, and travels a lot, China and Russia and all over the world. And you hear some of the things that happened on those business trips, the choices he made and the things that he fell into, the strain it put on his marriage. And you wonder, how did he get to that? How did he get to that? Where things where he's excited about life and still going and moving around and really active and doing all these wonderful things, and it helps to be a multimillionaire to be able to do a lot of these things sometimes, but he started these from the ground up. And you just look at, well, how did he get through all of them? How did he work through all those choices and those things that happened? And the thing is, and the key thing is, and what he would say and what I would say, it's not deep or profound, but at some point in time he made a decision. Some point in time he decided and said, I need to do something different. Something needs to change. Make a decision, and that's where it needs to start. And so that's kind of the first step in this whole thing, is saying, my past may remind me, but it will not define me. My past may remind me, but it's not going to define me. I'm going to make a decision that from now on, and it's not something that happened right away, right? He didn't make a decision and everything, his life was perfect, and all of a sudden he had these two houses kind of thing. But, you know, it's a process, but there's a decision that needs to be made. So we're talking about that, and what we're going to be looking at here, again, is this ability that we have. Each and every single one of us has that ability to make that decision, to choose where we're going and how we're going to move forward. And sometimes we think, well, this person did this and took control away from me, or this person, you know, changed, you know, fired me and this happened, so I lost control. But we all still have a decision and that ability to make that decision. And the recovery process that I was a part of, the Celebrate Recovery, this was step four, and it became kind of a running joke. And if I said step four to the Celebrate Recovery, everybody would laugh because it was just something about step four that was hard for people. One, two, and three, they were okay. Most people kind of hung out and did those. Once you get to step four, you know, like 3/4 of people just kind of dropped out. It was just such a hard step. It's such a time-consuming, detailed process that step four people just disappeared. And to be honest, I'm just going to be completely candid. Mostly candid. I'll be completely candid. I didn't do real well in step four, personally either. You're supposed to do all these different things, and I personally didn't actually take all the time that I should have to do it. Some parts of it I did really well. Some parts of step four I did better than, you know, I thought I could do, but the other parts I didn't do as completely as I'd like to. But at the same time, it's so worth it. It's so worth the time, it's so worth the effort, it's so worth the things that need to go into it to move forward. And so that's what we're going to talk about the rest of this morning is once you make the decision, what do we do moving forward? And we're going to jump to Ephesians chapter 4. For those of you that have your Bible, Ephesians chapter 4. And we're going to just look at four little verses towards the end of the chapter and look at what we can do with all that, the rocks that we're carrying in that backpack. And what we're going to do with the weight that it carries moving forward. And what Paul here, the Apostle Paul, writes this as well in Ephesians, and what that means. And he's going to use a word, and it's nothing new, it's nothing profound, it's something I've talked about probably more often than you want me to. But I think it's such an important part of what we do and who we are that it's worth talking about even. And the idea is forgiveness. It's forgiveness. So in Ephesians chapter 4, starting in verse 26, I skipped 25, so we're going to start in 26, and he writes, "Be angry, but do not sin. Be angry, but do not sin." And your translation might say, when you're angry, or if you get angry. And that's okay, too, because both words are imperative. Both words are commands. Do this, right? Be angry, do not sin. They're command words. But there's a caveat in commands that is permissive, that is allowing. And so he's allowing us and saying, you can be angry. Go ahead and be angry, but do not sin. And it's not a, you know, it's not a command angry, or if you're not angry, you need to find a pull and kick it so that you get angry, right? It's not that kind of do something to make get angry. I haven't been angry for a while, so, you know, I'm going to do something so my, you know, I get, anyway. It's permissive, and it's not permissive kind of where, you know, like when I'm driving with the kids and we're going back to Minnesota and we get to Macomb and someone says they have to go to the bathroom. And I say, how do you really have to go to the bathroom? On a scale of 1 to 10, how badly, and if it's the 3-year-old, it's always, I got to go real bad right now. Whether it's not true or not. But, you know, it's not a permissive word. You really absolutely have to, and if you can't control it or contain it anymore, then it's okay. But I think it's permissive in that it's going to happen. It's a part of life. Anger isn't anger itself isn't the enemy. Go ahead and be angry. But he says, do not sin. In that anger, don't let it control you. Don't let that anger become abusive or nagging or gossipy. It's an anger and injury, righteous anger or whatever, but the anger shouldn't lead to things that keep us trapped and control us. But it's permissive. Go ahead and be angry. But anger is kind of a cool, I shouldn't say it that way, but and it's not a good thing maybe in some ways, but it gives us a temperature for where we're at. Right? Just as we take a thermometer and we test our temperature, it tells us there's something going on if we've got, you know, some kind of temperature inside of us. But anger is the same way. Being angry is the same way. Is when we're angry, there's things going on underneath. Why am I angry? Why do I yell when they say this, when my kids do this? Why do I get angry when my wife, you know, this happens with our relationship? And so finding those answers, I think, can be a big part of this process as well. And so he says, be angry, but do not sin. He says, do not, verse 26 still, do not let the sun go down on your anger. Do not let the sun go down on your anger. And again, there's decisions in it. There's a decision to not sin. There's a decision to not let the sun go down on your anger. There's deciding, are we going to make that decision moving forward? And the cool thing about this, and I thought this was really helpful for me, is that letting the sun go down on your anger, not letting the sun go down on your anger, how many of you guys take that literally in your relationships or in your marriage? Some of you guys try to do that a little bit? Okay. If you do that, that is great. I personally can't do that. I don't think there are some things that are just too big in life that I don't know that I can do that. And if you can do that, that's great. I applaud you. Do your, you know, work through it to get it figured out. But I would say in this, what Paul is saying is he knows there are some things we can solve before we go to bed. There are some things that we can do before we go to sleep. Right, I leave my clothes laying on the floor for the, you know, umpteenth time, and Michelle, you know, lovingly says, please pick them up, or pick them up now, or, you know, sleep on the couch. Anyway, she doesn't do that. But, you know, whatever it is, we can probably solve that before we go to bed. Right, something small, even, you know, that, or not cleaning up the sink right, or whatever it is. These are hypothetical things, just, you know. Whatever it is, something small, we can solve that before we go to bed. But some of those big things we can't. Some of those big relational things we can't deal with, I don't think, before we go to bed. They're just so big. But it's so cool, I think, what Paul is saying here is he's, instead of saying literally, handle this before you go to bed, he's saying there is a time period to get this done. Solve this sometime soon. It may not be today, but soon. Deal with it. There's a time period. There's a time basis here. How many sunsets are we going to allow this to continue? 2 sunsets, 7 sunsets, 5 years worth of sunsets. I mean, there's a time period that he's saying, get this done. Deal with it. Solve it. Release it. Move forward. Whatever it takes, kind of a thing, almost. And he's maybe not literally saying do it by the time you go to bed, but do it. How many sunsets is it going to take? Do not let the sun go down on your anger. He said in 27, and give no opportunity to the devil. And maybe your translation says foothold. Do not give the devil a foothold. But that opportunity word makes a lot of sense because that's really what it is. We don't want to give Satan an opportunity to get into our hearts and our minds. I like the foothold imagery because I'm not a big military person, but my understanding is that it's kind of like a beachhead, where if a military, an army can get a beachhead into an island, then it becomes that much easier to conquer the whole island. They can get just a little bit. They just need to build a little bit of the beach. They need to get just enough of that land to set a perimeter, and then they can infiltrate into the rest of the island and the rest of the nation. And it just takes a foothold. And that's what happens in our heart, is that when we're angry and it festers and it grows and it continues to build, then Satan can continue to work and to grow and to meander into our different areas of our lives. And I can attest to that personally so much. That my anger and my resentment and my bitterness in different areas of life filtered into everywhere that I went and everything that I did. So do not give, or give no opportunity to the devil. And then we're going to skip to verse 31. In verse 31, Paul says, let all bitterness, wrath, and anger, and clamor, and slander be put away from you, along with all malice. We could talk about each of those, bitterness and wrath, anger, clamor, which is kind of like fighting or brawling. Put all those things away, as well as every kind of malice. We could talk about each individual word in that. I don't know if that's helpful or not. It probably would be. But what I want to see, and what I see clearly here, is that none of that phrase, and nowhere in there does it say that other person needs to do something. It doesn't say that other person needs to come and apologize, and then you can let go of your bitterness. That other person needs to come and say they're sorry, and then I can let go of my anger, my clamor, whatever. That's not a good word, because I don't know what clamor means. You know, I can deal with it. But there's nothing about what the other person says. It's all about where I'm at, my bitterness, my anger, my malice. When another person comes and apologizes, basically we have the opportunity to just say yes or no. They apologize. That doesn't necessarily do anything to our bitterness. My heart, my problem. I've used that before, I think. But we're going to keep reading here now, though. In 23 or 32, he says, instead of these things, be kind to one another, tender-hearted, and forgiving one another. And we know that word. We've heard it said before. We know kind of what it means most of the time, but I don't do it a lot of times real well. I know we don't handle it real well a lot of times, but I thought, appreciate what Steve said in his message, because that was the same illustration with Obama I was going to use as well, where Obama went, we didn't collaborate on that, we're just both really smart people. So, you know, Obama did that, he pardoned a bunch of people, he commuted sentences, commutations, that was the word. I didn't know quite sure what it meant. So, but commuting sentences, but he pardoned a bunch of people. And when he pardoned, I love this definition from Slate.com. It said when Obama pardoned, or a presidential pardon, it says, is a formal forgiveness by the government that restores certain liberties, the right to vote, own firearms, maybe release them from incarceration or something like that. But it forgives them of the penalty, but it does not imply innocence. It does not imply innocence, nor does it expunge a criminal record. Forgiveness is like a pardon. Then it's still saying you are completely guilty. That other person is completely guilty, but we're going to free them from their punishment. They cannot pay back enough to be able to pay off whatever they owe us. That's what a pardon is. It's not saying you're not guilty. It's not saying it didn't hurt me. It's not saying it's not a big deal, right? We say that all the time. Oh, it's okay. It's okay. Because it's not necessarily okay. But a pardon and forgiving is about freeing that person from future punishment. So, I just think that's a great image, because if we think about the rocks that we've been carrying, or the chain that holds us down, or whatever, to be able to move forward well, to make next time better than last time. It's partying, it's forgiving, is taking that off and saying, I don't want it anymore. I'm not going to hold on to this weight that's going to continue to lead and guide and direct where I'm going in my life. I'm going to free you from your punishment. And then he finishes here in verse 32. He says, be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, as God in Christ forgave you. That's what Steve was saying too with our communion meditation, is that Christ has forgiven each and every single one of them. So he says that is the example, that is the means, that is the what we look to for how we move forward well and how we can forgive well. So to me, that, you know, if we can leave it at that, and you know, sometimes for some people that's enough. God forgave us, so I should forgive other people, and that's great. That doesn't always work for everybody, because it just doesn't feel like it. It doesn't feel the same way. But when we remember that God does not factor our sin into His relationship with us, how can we factor in the sin of other people into our relationship with them? God does not factor in our sin in his relationship with us. How can we allow sin to factor into our relationship with others? There's that pardon, there's that forgiveness, there's that letting go of the punishment. And even if the court says that this person is going to be incarcerated for 50 years or 50 hours of community service and they need to pay this fine, we still have them in our court. And what are we going to say in our court? Yeah, you're guilty. And we can, I don't know, you probably can say that in people's faces, but, you know, you're guilty. But I'm going to free you from all punishment. Because really, if we think about it, and I, like I said, you guys, have, a lot of you guys, some of you guys have dealt with a lot more than I can ever imagine. But how can we expect, or how can we even imagine that they could ever pay us back or pay for what they've done to us? Maybe it's a child, but how could anybody ever pay us back for a child? Maybe it's years and years of our time. How could they ever pay that back? There's just some things that there's just no way that they could pay us back. But yet we hold on, I think, and I do this, holding on to something, expecting them to pay back. Maybe not thinking of it in that way, but expecting them to pay it back in such a way that I can move forward. But a pardon says you don't have to pay back, you can't pay back. We've got to move forward. And so the first thing we need to do is we need to decide. We need to make a decision. The second thing, and this is something that, again, so worth it, if you guys are, if we're willing to take the time, and part of the step four I didn't do great on, but is we need to make a list. And some of you guys have the list, right? Oh, she did this, and she did that, and they said this, and maybe you could come up with a list pretty quick. I know I do that. I like listening, so I did that. I found all this list. But some of us haven't done that. And even if we have done that, we haven't ever sat down and wrote that list out and forgave them for those things specifically. Maybe we've forgiven in general. We said, oh, I forgive them and I deal with this, but we don't feel any different. We're still kind of carrying those rocks because we haven't prayed specifically what has happened and what they've done. Okay, number one. All right, I forgive them for number one. Number two. All right, I don't know if I can forgive that one yet. So you move on to number three, and you deal with number. Well, we go back to it, right? If we can't forgive something, and that's, you know, maybe that's okay. Prayer, spending time with God, working through it in our minds, and we can maybe come to a time where we can forgive all those things on that list. And so I encourage you, if you look at your pie chart, remember mine over here. You look at your chart and you say, these are the things that I've done, right? In our own at time, we list kind of our own. That's kind of the step four that I was talking about with my recovery program. We deal with our own stuff, we list our stuff, and then we list all their stuff. And we list everything out. And then step four, and we're not going to talk about that, there's the, we are, I guess, but there's the, how much do I need to make amends for, what do I need to forgive, and all those kind of things. That's part of that too. But if we make that list, and you don't need to show them the whole list and say, this, look at all this. Look, it's like 3 pages long, guys. Look at this. You know, we don't need to do that, but we can work through it individually and where we're at. And so we come to a place where we can forgive those things, where we can take that backpack off and drop those rocks. But the key thing is, the key element to this whole circle of blame, and why I asked you to do it 2 weeks ago, was that if we don't take responsibility for our power, if we don't take responsibility for what our part was, there's no way we can forgive and move on from what they did. It starts, and that's what we talked about a couple weeks ago, but we can't take our pie, we can't take our section and deal with it to even make amends for our end or at least accept it and own it. There's no way we can pass off and release and let go of their part. So that's the first step, that's the first part. But this whole rest of it is making the decision, writing it out, working through that list in individual ways, and being able to release them. Because if we don't, like I said, we smuggle all that stuff down. We sneak it into our future. It becomes a part of all of our decisions. And those things should inform our decisions. It should give us information to make decisions in the future. But they shouldn't determine our decisions. So if you're like me, if you been a part of this as well, or done this in different ways, but it takes time. It's hard. And it's going to take some effort, and it's going to take emotion. But as we've been talking about, we start with owning, taking our slice of the pie, and then lastly, like I said, we identify and we rethink some of the things that we've decided to do, and that's really kind of the decision process, but it's also seeing some of the assumptions that we've made, being a transformer, not a conformer, and then releasing. Letting people go. Not expecting them to pay for their punishment. Releasing the past so that it can release. Pardon as you have been pardoned. And that's what God wants to reach. He wants us to tell a new story, something different in our lives, so that we can have next time be better than last time. Let's pray. Gracious Father, we thank you for your forgiveness for all of us individually. Thank you for that blessing and that pouring out, but we also just pray that we can pass that on. So we can forgive others in whatever way that means, in whatever manner that looks, and we can just pray that you will step into our lives. And we just pray that you guide and direct and lead us down that path. We thank you for your Son again. We thank you for the cross. We thank you for his shed blood. Thank you that we didn't deserve it, that you looked at us and loved us. Praise the Lord Jesus.